Okay, well, we have another minute, so just let me say hello to everybody. And Jay, I quoted, you sent me that evidently from my Maimonides journal about the three rabbis that come out of one class. We spoke about that last week. I also believe your brother did a fine act of chesed, distributing 500 copies of Rabbi Aaron Adler's book on the Rav. Rabbi Aaron told me about it, and big yasher koyach to your brother. It's a wonderful little volume, in my opinion, because it's the real Rav. It's not seeing the Rav through your own hashkafa and prisma, but it's the real Rav. Okay, I'll begin. I'll answer some of Jack's comments. Okay, we're ready. Today is May 31st, 2021. And Jack informed me that
today is June the May. Oh, sorry.
May 31st. The Yomo is now correcting me into June, so I think he's a little bit off the path today.
No, I heard 21st, and I just
Okay, Beseda, we're May 31st. No one is arguing. Jack also mentioned to me that today on the Hebrew calendar is the 39th anniversary of the battle in Sultam Yaakov, and that was a very famous battle that a terrible mistake was made with intelligence and on the intercom when they said turn right, and the person repeated it, turn right, and the people in the tank took it to mean turn right and then another right, and they went right into Syrian hands. Many were killed and three boys were missing. At least the body of Yonah Bamel came back. The other two bodies have never been recovered. Some of you know that I devoted a lot of time and effort and unique thinking to the problem. Again, if YU, like I said, was interested in the Israeli scene, they would have made big publicity. One of our rebbeim changed the whole thinking of the Israeli army. And then, oh, people said, Harav Rakefet, but it has not happened and it will not happen. So that's what I mentioned about recognition and prizes. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's not in my ballpark. Jack also, yesterday in class, I mentioned very briefly about the difference between the Rav and Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook regarding Zionism, and I thought I had mentioned it in class over the decades. Anyway, be it as it may, I don't really recall where I mentioned it, what I write, what I say. It's all part of one human being trying to relieve himself of all his thought, thinking, innovations, etc. But I stand on what I said, and I can elaborate it very deeply, but it's not for now. I do want to correct two mistakes I made yesterday. One, I mentioned the slip of the tongue that the Ramchal lived out his final years in Switzerland. Went to Switzerland. He went to Holland. I was thinking of modern terms. We would run away to Switzerland. No, he ran away to Holland and spent, I believe it was 7, 8 years there. That's where he wrote Mesillat Yesharim. And from Holland, he went in Aliyah. He died in Israel, a young man. He suffered tremendously during his life, and I went through more of the correspondence yesterday. I want to finish it up later this week because I want to give it to my Talmud and nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf. I'll be near his office on Thursday. I have to see my other Talmud, Dr. Ari Teitelbaum, iWorld, and their offices are next to each other. And it's just overwhelming to see someone so great who we so admire and what that man went through in his life, called an Apikoros and a Ma'aretz and a Shabtai Tzvinik, etc., etc. But okay, it has to be understood in historical context. The other mistake I made, I used the term that the New York Times has developed, that these new individuals are progressive. I will never use that term again. The proper term is pagans. Pagnonic thinking. A pagnonic lifestyle. What characterizes a pagan? He He worships idols, he has no God, he ultimately is the arbiter of truth, ethics, morals, and all that goes with it. And this is what we have today, a rebirth of idol worship, which I will call paganism. I will not believe that they use the word progressive again. I'm a progressive Jew. A progressive Jew means someone who studies Torah, Machadesh, writes, and inspires others, Lalechit B'derech HaTorah. Okay. And I've corrected those. Then I also want to mention there'll be two more weeks of Shayurim after today. Next Sunday, Monday, Sunday, Monday afterwards. And then we'll take a respite for until Chodesh Elul. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope life will be more back to normal. But Tanish Tarat L'Hashem Elokeinu. Now, regarding yesterday, I also mentioned about the Shechayon on Atalitz, Rabbi Grinstein sent me a letter that maybe it's better to make the kala, should make the shechiyanu together with the chatan on the ring. I'll tell you, the chatanim have given kala rings for thousands of years now. And no one ever came up with the idea she should make a shechiyanu. Lehefech, we give a ring that is as cheap as possible. By today's standards, even in Israel, the kala looks at the ring, oh, I'm bad, she's not going to make a shechiyanu yet. There'll be other gifts that perhaps, yes. But the minhag has developed with the talit. I never saw it in the United States. I never saw it in all my years in the rabbinate in America. And when I came to Israel, slowly but surely, it's taken over. Well, it all goes back to what I've lectured on, and Jack, I trust, I did this in the Kollel, Im lo nevi'im hein, b'nei nevi'im hein, the Gemara in Pesachim. We have to be samach on Klal Yisrael, the Gemara in Bracha, Daf Mem Daled, Amit Bet, Mem Hei, Amit Aleph, Fuk Chazi, Maya Madava. And if people have developed this, it's now part of Minhag Yisrael, Alat Mata Kodesh. And it's beautiful, the talit and putting it on and wrapping it around you and halavai together with the chatan v'kala, as I saw the other night. And then I tell you, as I tell every chatan v'kala, or as I've told all my grandchildren, as happy as I am now, in 50, 60 years from now, when I see you both together and holding hands and loving each other and considerate of each other, I know that we've really achieved. So I have to accept the Minhag Yisrael, even with the Ha'arat that you mentioned. Now, what I mentioned yesterday, I just want to cite Nachum Lem quoted the book To Dwell in His Palace. I happen to have that book. One of my dear friends, I think, paid the entire cost of publication, if not certainly a major part. And yes, you're absolutely right. When you live in Chutz Laretz, willy-nilly, you can be the firmest Jew in the world. You worship Avodah Zarah. All week in a shtibble in Borough Park, they daven at 7 o'clock. Sunday morning, they daven 9 o'clock. If that isn't Avodah Zarah, you tell me what is. Thanksgiving Day, suddenly they're davening at 9 o'clock. New Year's Day, 9 o'clock. I don't have to go further with examples. So that this is what's quoted in the book. And they're quoting Rav Avigdor Miller, no matter how from you are, if you live in the U.S., you can never claim you don't keep Sunday. It's a special day. And what is that but ultimately Avodah Zarah? And then they write that Rabbi Miller added, almost as an afterthought, I hear in Israel they don't have Sunday, it's just a regular day there. And I have to tell you, that was one of our hardest adjustments when we came in Aliyah. I'm sure everyone here will agree with me on the screen, and those that have come in Aliyah, I'm getting my students in front of me are shaking their heads, yes. You got to adjust. I used to say in Israel there are two Mondays, Monday A, Sunday, and Monday B, Monday. And you don't realize nowadays on Friday at least, most people don't work. When I came in Aliyah, they worked Friday at least half a day. And everyone worked on Sunday. So yes, Avodah Zarah, and then that's, you'll see with the problem I've raised, and I'm going to go further, it's a whole continuation of the non-Jewish clothes, we live among Goyim, and how do we maintain Torah Hashem Tamima and yet remain good neighbors? And this is a very difficult question, halacha l'maisa. I just want to mention, Noach walked in, I just finished dictating a Hebrew letter to Yomo, to Satma, to a Talmud in Satma who writes to me all the time, B'Kavod Gadol, I'll quote him next Sunday in Shia. So it's what I told you, if you're going back to America, which I'm not happy about, because every Jew belongs here, we need you desperately now, particularly someone who wears a shtreimel on Shabbos. But if you're going back and you're a Satma / YU person, you have a big job to do. And there is, in a whole, you have to be Makarav Satma to come back to Torah Hashem Tamima. And you have to read what I'm writing now, and which I hope to finish the manuscript over the summer. It's going to be crucially important for you to understand who you are, what you are, where we are, and the Ribbono Shel Olam. You understand? I'm dealing with all the problems. And I claim anyone who will see my sources, it's Kulo Maltarat HaKodesh, it'll solve all. I'm an idiot. I believe I can solve all problems. A good Jew, and yet part of the big world, Zionist, etc., a profession, etc. I can feel my Rebbe kissing me on the head, but I want the Satmar Ruv also to understand what I'm writing. Okay, I also want to mention, this is very big news, very beautiful. Again, I hope you understand what this is about. My daughter was involved. Remember I told you, in Israel we have a blessing. I lectured on this in great detail on the Sunday class. Over the decades I published about this in Rakafet Aron, Chelik Himmel, Chelik Dalet. One of our big problems in modern times is the man-inflicted aguna. A poor woman gets married, the marriage doesn't work. All right, we have to live in reality. Divorce is all over the place today. Ein bayat asher ein shamet. I never dreamt I would see so much divorce, but this is the reality. Fine. Now, if a man refuses to give a get, they passed the get law in Israel ages ago that he can be penalized. No driver's license, no license to practice anything you need a license for, law, medicine, accountancy, etc. No license, no bank account, no checks, no passport, no credit card. And if he still refuses, they can throw him into jail. And if he still refuses, he can be thrown into solitary confinement, which is a recent addendum. I've spoken about it, a recent addendum to the original law. Now, the problem with this law, Benjamin, is that it was written if the man refuses to give a get. So a case came up that my daughter had, and it went all the way to the Supreme Rabbinic Court, because they went, and Rav Lau, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, said hatoenet ta'enet sodeket legamrei, and he ruled again in her favor. What was the case? A woman who refused to receive a get. So let's talk lumdus. The New York Times once got involved in this on its front page. It's an amazing world today. Many years ago, let's talk lumdus. What's wrong? So the man doesn't. She doesn't want to get. Go fly a kite. The man will take a nice lady and say, "Look, I can't marry you. I technically have a wife, but I'd like you to be my pelegish, and we'll draw up a legal contract that I will support you." The woman will insist that he will not live with any other women. She will be his pelegish. All right, what's wrong with it? Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I can't go into great detail now, it'll take 2 hours, but you have sources that you can develop this very, very capably. A pelegish? No, Nishkefelach. In Lakewood, there was a guy that had a wife and a pelegish, and they tell me, they swear it's true. I think I just saw a picture. They took a picture of his door, and in one door it said his name with one woman, and on another door it said his name with another woman. But this man is a tzaddik. He's not playing around. One single pelegish. So, all right. But there are men who are very reputable and upright and decent, and they say, look, I don't want to live with a concubine. I don't want to, what am I, an Eved Ivri that I have to live with a Shifka Kananit? And I want to get so I can marry legally. And the wife refuses. So my daughter had a case where this woman refused to take the get to eat the man's heart out. And she didn't care about remarrying. Remember, essentially speaking, anyone who studies sexology, a woman's sexual urge, it can be a lot less than a man. Again, I don't know if the details there, because there's a lot I know and a lot I've studied and a lot of research. But generally speaking, so she doesn't want to get, but she wants to torture him. So Taina won the case that the strictures apply to the woman as well as the man. Afterwards, the Knesset officially, I remember my daughter testified before one of the Knesset committees, the Knesset officially revised the law to apply to a woman. They changed the language that in hu misarev or he misarevet, and it applies equally. So there just was a case, and Americans involved, an Israeli woman fined 5,000 a month, 5,000 shekel for refusing to accept the get. And it's a sad case. I don't know who the people are. And Rabbi David Lau, the son of Rabbi Yisrael Meir, the present chief rabbi, said, you don't know how much effort we put into this. The couple involved in the case married 30 years ago in the United States. They have 8 children and emigrated to Israel about 15 years ago. They have had ongoing marital problems, and over the years, many attempts have been made to resolve this dispute. So you see, here, I don't want to go into more details, but here is exactly the mirror image of the man who is torturing the woman, generally for money, and here's a woman torturing the man for whatever her reasons are, and refusing to accept the get, when the Beitin and the secular court, wherever you turn, everyone is ruled, there's no hope for the marriage, give a get, they reach the settlement, divide the property, take care of the children, and it's applied. So I have to say, kol hakavod. This I have to remember. Someone asked me to say something on Yaakov Kamenetsky, we'll come to it later. Regarding what I said in last Monday's class, Reb Nachum Shmayahu Zazak wrote to me about pills. I just want to tell you, Reb Nachum Shmayahu, lo amar etzanochi. I'm well aware of what you're writing, but when we get the yeshiva tells, we'll discuss it in greater depth. But I didn't want to, if you understood me to mean that tells had a college like yeshiva college, absolutely not. Tells had a high school, had a gymnasium that they did have. They also had a seminary for girls, and they prepared students to teach as well, but not a formal college, absolutely not. Nevertheless, Telz was considered the most open of all the yeshivot of Europe. You had no one else that was on that level. Regarding Rab David Staff and his son Rab Avram Staff, the story as related is that Rab Aaron Lichtenstein was asked, why are you supporting Rab Staff, Rab David, for the chief rabbinate if he's not the greatest lamdan in Israel? So Rab Aaron answered that the chief rabbinate today, you don't measure by who's the greatest, neither lamdan, but it's by who can achieve political, material, publicity of a positive level, who knows how to reach out to the Jews in Israel. And Reb Aaron said, there's no one better than Reb David Staff. Now, Yehoshua Grinstein wrote to me that he told me Reb Staff is a lamdan muvhak. I don't doubt it. He says he can speak and learning in any sugya, which was and is a great commodity. And he's tell stories where Rav Stav came in and anything you were talking about, he could add Rishonim and Achronim. So I didn't want to, of course he's a great Lamdan, but someone asked that question of Baran, that story is related. By the way, the story with the Rav that I mentioned yesterday, I think the correct version is that Sabra and Shatila took place during the Yom Narayim period. And the Rav was overwhelmed by the reports in the New York Times, and the Jews are killing Muslims, etc. Like Begin said, the Haggadah Goy, and the Jews get blamed. So the Rav evidently called Dr. Borg, and the story went around that he said, you can even call him on Yom Kippur to tell him to stop. So the joke was, they said to the Rav, this many hostos said, Rebbe, that people heard the story that you would call on Yom Kippur, no one doubted. You're a nainical of Reb Chaim, Pikuach Nefesh, of course. But no one could believe that Dr. Yosef Borg would answer the phone on Yom Kippur. That, and they said the Rav had a good laugh out of that. Okay, be it as it may. Regarding what I said last week when we got involved with the swimming on the beaches, so I have to tell you, I wasn't telling you fairy tales. Bill Gvirtz, Dr. Gvirtz, a Talmud of Teira Vedas in its golden years, so he wrote me a whole letter on the Rosh Yeshiva. I don't want to mention names, but he told his, there's a very famous individual, told his daughter not to tell anyone in her school, she went to Beit Jacob, that she went to the beach with her father. And he goes on with other Rabbanim who were very much at home in Far Rockaway. And yes, this was the world then, but today I don't think any Rav can be matir going mixed swimming. The way we dress, it's, as I told you, that photo in the New York Times about 1902 in the girls' camp, the women, these are Goyish women, not Jewish, would dress more tzniyistik than we walk around, this is going swimming, they would dress more tzniyistik than most of the women walking on Melech George today. All right, and regarding kids going to yeshiva, so I mentioned that kids were switched to from public school to yeshivat because people were frightened about the drugs. So Normie Schloss wrote to me that my wife had many classmates who went to public schools, but because of busing, were switched to Jewish day schools. And all right, there may be a lot of truth to that, busing meaning that they were bringing in the underprivileged children, the non-Caucasian children, and a lot of Jewish parents were afraid what that element would do to their children. And I say, thank God that we have all these problems, mitoch shelo lishma, balishma. Let's get them into the day schools and let's see if we can influence. And finally, I thank Rabbi David Sukenik. He sent me, this is from publications of Rabbi Mordechai Gifter, and here's a beautiful letter with Chidushei Torah to Joe Kamenetsky. Yedidim old nale Rabbi Yosef, Dr. Kamenetsky, Lerech Yomim Tovim, Shalom v'yesharav. And he ends off the letter. This appears in Mador Habatzat HaTorah on page Kuf Chaf Aleph. And it's a collection of letters of Reb Mordechai Gifter, the famous Telza Rosh Yeshiva, a graduate of MTA. And he ends off the letter, Va'ata Yedidi Yakiri, Hinech Hincha Oseik Be'avodat HaKodesh Selasiyat Nefashat LeTorah. Dalecha Mizeh, Godel HaMesma Shehutla Alecha, Ashrecha Umatov Helkecha. And you can see this beautiful rabbinic Hebrew and the high regard that the Telza Rosh Yeshiva had for Dr. Joe. So Dr. Joseph Kamenetsky was one of a kind, Shemaim Zikunu, a Yeshiva College graduate, the very first college graduating class, and someone who was influenced by Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher. And he was able to build Torah Mesorah, spread it across to the United States. And he had to deal with very delicate problems, the Rabbinic Advisory Board. Not all the Rabbanim, particularly in the earlier years, understood America, could identify with America. Remember, there were Rabbanim who held, as I still believe until today, the Torah can only be understood in Yiddish. I just wrote to my Talmud in Satmar, Noach, and you'll understand next Sunday what we were talking about, but I wrote to him, it's true, everyone sees the Torah within the own framework of how they received it. And I said, you know that I said in class when I learned in Lakewood, Freddie Zucker convinced me the Eibishter gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu and the Yiddish is a Kenish sign under it. It can't be different. So I mentioned to him, I was in Sadek Kedushin last week in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. There had to be at least 300 people at the wedding. It was spread out all over the lawn with the wow. And I would say 98% of the people were from. It's inevitable you have some people who are not from, but 95%, 97% were from. And I think I was the only person on that lawn who could speak and understand Yiddish. And dafka, the young people who gathered around me, the Edom, and I had such nachat, were all Moroccan, Iraqi, Persian, Yemenite. So they were very, I don't know if I said this to you yesterday, if I did stop me, but they were very moved that I mentioned Medinat Yisrael, and in the Ketuvah I wrote in, Me'a Elef Shekel, Shkalim Chadashim Shel Medinat Yisrael. And I used the handkerchief, Lekabel Kinyan, for my grandson, a blue and white handkerchief. And so I said to this young man, a Yemenite, a terrific individual, each one, they all knew my grandson from either Hezda together or in the army together. And my grandson, I think, is the only one who's studying of a science. This one is a Rosh Hashiva, is a Rebbe in a Hezda Yeshiva. This one is an Avreich. So this Yemenite boy, I compliment me. So I said to him, Lama Tamit Pael, Ani Talmid Rav Soloveitchik, Petach HaTamakir, Kol Dodi Dofeik. Well, this Yemenite kid went crazy. Ata Talmid Shel Rav Yosef Soloveitchik. And he started reciting to me, Kol Dodi Dofeik, word by word. So could you imagine, I'm the only one there who knew Yiddish. According to Freddie Zucker, I'm the only firm person there. And here, this kid, wow, Yemenite, Kol Dodi Dofeik, word by word. All right, Baruch Hashem. I told him that Malkar and I were in the audience. There's a picture of the crowd listening. I can point out myself and Malkar, 1956. And the Rav Taka spoke in Yiddish. People don't realize that the manuscript was Hebrew. In other words, the Rav wrote it in Hebrew and spoke in Yiddish. I do the same thing in my Sunday class. You know, a good deal of it is written in Hebrew, but I relate it in English. And then it was published from the manuscript. And I don't have to tell you, it is a major piece of work. That isn't the moment, Jack, where the thesis is more than the antithesis. You follow? There he already, he forgets about Chaim Weizmann and Trial and Error and Ben-Gurion and all the other factors. Okay, now, but let me go further. And here we come to the part that Dr. Joe hints at. He doesn't write it out, Kvod Hashem Hasteh Davar, and he hints at it. And first of all, let me quote from a source that may be banned in other institutions, but it's not banned here. Making of a Gadol by Reb Nosson Kamenetsky. And right away, people wonder, you have Joe Kamenetsky and you have Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Are they related? And here I'm quoting from Making of a Gadol, page 1195. And he tells the following story. Dr. Kamenetsky's father, Joe Kamenetsky's father, suffered a degenerative disease which required that he have stimuli to arouse his awareness of his surroundings. My father, meaning Reb Yaakov, started a conversation with him. Reb Yaakov was visiting Nichum Avel when Joe Kamenetsky's mother died. And Reb Yaakov saw right away this man was suffering from illness, started a conversation, and he asked, where are you from in Europe? And Dr. Joe's father replied, Slunim. Reb Yaakov said, then we are related, because the Kamenevskis of Slunim were related. And then Nassim Kamenevsky, the son of Reb Yaakov, the author of Making of a Gadol, goes on to describe more testimony that when a certain family came Lenachim Avil, Joe Kamenevsky, when he was sitting shiva for his brother, so they told the story that one time this brother visited and Reb Yaakov Kamenevsky, and Reb Yaakov showed a portrait on his wall and said to his guest, this is a picture of my grandfather, Reb Shmuel Hirsch Kamenevsky, and your father's grandfather was his brother. And in other words, Reb Yaakov was a second cousin of Dr. Joe Kamenevsky. And this information I'm going to show you as well is in Dr. Joe's memoir. Now, so we have the two Kamenevskys related, and people took for granted they were related because Kamenevsky is not that common a name, and they both hailed from East European sources, and their relationship becomes a lot deeper, not because of the names. And this is between the lines, you can understand many times Dr. Joe is attacked by what he calls zealots in the rabbinic advisory board, or zealots in the yeshiva world. And time again, it was Reb Yaakov who stood up for him and protected him. And this too, as you know, is part of Reb Yaakov's demeanor, deportment, his reputation. Reb Yaakov was very, very different than others on the American Torah scene in the so-called framework of Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, the Gedolei HaTorah who came either right before World War II or after World War II. Now, but I want to show you something very interesting. And put this into parentheses. Nassim Kamenevsky on page 1196 has an addendum here that really has nothing to do with Reb Yaakov and Dr. Joe, but an addendum where he sets a tone that even Gedolei Yisrael that you would consider very extreme in the literature world, at least, they were more understanding than you could imagine. And here he tells two stories about the Briska Rav. Now, when you talk about the Briska Rav, when you talk about Rav Velvel, you're talking about a Gon Shebagoinim. On the other hand, Rav Velvel wouldn't join Agudat Yisrael. Agudat Yisrael was not within his understanding of Torah. The Rav, in his famous hesped for Rav Velvel, that was a meridic hesped, but one of the things that the Rav said, that Rav Velvel's mind only worked with Torah concepts, and anything he couldn't fit into a Torah concept, he couldn't accept. And imagine, even Agudat Yisrael, until today, there's now one exception. There's one Soloveitchik in Yerushalayim who's very active in Degel HaTorah, but he's the exception that proves the rule. So, very fascinating for us. Where are we sitting? We're sitting here in Yerushalayim. We look out the window. What do we see? Machon Lev. So, Reb Yaakov had a Talmud, Professor Zev Lev. He was Reb Yaakov's Talmud in Toronto. He moved to Israel in the spring of 1950. And Reb Yaakov, Reb Nassim Kamenevsky is relating this. My father instructed him, to visit Rav Velvula. When he came to visit Rav Velvula, here is this newcomer to Israel, Zev Lev, brilliant scientist, brilliant mind, little Israel, little opportunity. Maybe he should have stayed in America, he should have stayed in Canada. Was he right in coming in Aliyah? And he asked the Brisker Rav this very question. Had he done the right thing? The Brisker Rav replied, and this is in quotes, "I cannot answer this question. America is 200 years old, and we know what it's like. Israel is only 2 years old, and it's too soon to know how it will turn out." Quote, end quote. So it's very fascinating. You might have expected the Brisker Rav to say, maybe you made a mistake in America, Kennedy could have more influence. Here, look where we are, look with the government, look at the problems we have. Very interesting. America's 200 years old. Israel is just 2 years old. It's a little baby. We don't know how it's going to turn out. He didn't discourage him. This is one story. The other story is much sharper. And here you have to have a little bit background. Originally, the Mapai owned the country. The Mapai owned the country. Everything was involved with Mapai, with Mifleget Avodah, and including the Histadrut. Now, the Histadrut, in order to get a good job, you had to be a Mapainik, you had to have a red card, I think it was called. I personally knew very great people who left the country because they were Chayrut, and they were hated by the establishment. Ben-Gurion said, not the communists, and not the Chayrutnikim. And they drove them out of the country. So the Histadrut had hundreds of thousands of members who were from, who were Svadi, who were traditional. You had survivors, for some get at Yiddish, their native language was Yiddish, they were traditional, they were from. So the Histadrut always had a rabbi. I Dafka live right near the last official rabbi of the Histadrut. I don't know today if they have a rabbi. Today already religion is much more widespread. You don't need a special little rabbi in the Histadrut. But Rav Menachem HaKohen, Pinchas Peli's kid brother, lives on Rehov Chalap. I live in Berlin. He lives up the steps from me. He was a famous rabbi of the Histadrut. So here, at a certain point, they offered to the rabbinate to Rabbi Eliyahu Makapkovsky, that's Rabbi Leo Kitov. You've all read his writings. They offered him to become the Rav of the Histadrut. And you have to understand, Rabbi Leo Kitov is, I believe I even met him, but I knew his son-in-law very well. I knew his daughter. I know his granddaughter. She appears on the Israeli radio. Hasidic music she selects, and the Histadrut wanted to appoint him Rav, and he came from a right-wing so-called background, a Haredi background in today's language. So he came to Rav Velvel, and he asked Rav Velvel, what should he do? And Rav Velvel said, yes, you could become, he started thinking aloud, they're quoting now Rav Velvel. Yeah, you could become Rav of the Histadrut. It would provide tremendous opportunities to draw people to Yiddishkeit, to ensure the religious rights of workers, to ensure that the cafeterias are properly kosher, and that the workers are not forced to desecrate the Shabbat. Yes, they would be very. That would be very important. But the Brisker Rav continued, "Why is Mapai interested in all this? Ah, they want to draw votes away from Mizrahi. They want to hurt Mizrahi. They want to show they're also from." And he turned to Rav Kitov, knew they want to hurt this Mizrahi. Absolutely do not accept the position. We must not do anything that might weaken the Mizrahi. You cannot accept this post. And that's a fabulous comment. He gives you sources. I don't believe Rav Nassim made it up. And you see, Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael, but there's realism. There's a situation. there's Mizrahi. Mapait always tried to show we're religious. You can vote for us. You can trust us. Rav Eliyahu Kitov would have been a tremendous find, a tremendous catch. But it would have made a statement, you don't need Mizrahi to remain from. And one of the best stories, and people swear to me this is an absolute true story. In one of the early elections, Mizrahi was a power then, and Mapai wanted to clear an absolute majority, not to have to make a coalition government. So to attract some of the simple people who were basically from and would vote Mizrahi, they wanted to show that they're from. And Shabbos morning, one of their well-known figures came into the great synagogue in Tel Aviv, which was then, today they're reconstructing it, but then it was really the great synagogue in Tel Aviv, came in Shabbos morning with talus and tefillin on. He's going to shul, he remembered in his youth, you went to shul, you put on tefillin, he came in on Shabbos. But you see, this is Nesson Kamenetsky talking about his father. I believe this is a good overture. This is Rav Yaakov. I don't want to tell you Rav Yaakov was a Mizrahiite. He was not a Mizrahiite. I don't want to tell you that Rav Yaakov encouraged people, the masses, to go to YU. Individually, there were people that he did send to YU. That I know is a fact. But but on the other hand, he was very realistic. And he didn't negate other points of view. Underlined the words, did not negate. He also understood that there can be a big difference between what you'll tell a day school to do in New York City proper and what you'll tell a day school to do in Detroit. And here I want to quote to you from Memorable Encounters from Dr. Joe's book, beginning on page 118, he just talks about Reb Yaakov. And he says the same story that I just told you a few minutes ago. And he says the minute they established that they are second cousins, whenever he would call Joe Kamenetsky's home on Torah Mesorah business, and his wife would answer the phone, he immediately would say to her, "Was macht mein Cousine? How is my cousin? How do you feel?" He immediately acknowledged that they are cousins. How do you feel? Speaking to his wife, "Was macht mein Cousine?" Now, here you come to between the lines, what's very important. It's not the final class. So they're making a kiddush for we have two more weeks to roll. I've worked out the schedule and etc. Here you've got to read between the lines, and I quote to you from page 120. There is a now famous incident in which a man approached Reb Yaakov with a criticism of one of Torah Mesorah's more outreach-oriented programs. And Reb Yaakov's answer was characteristic. Quote, "You young people think you know everything. Sit down and learn another 20 years and maybe you'll know what to do. In the meantime, hold your peace. Joe Kamenetsky asks us about everything he does. So if you have a complaint, it isn't with him, but with us, the Rabbinical Administrative Board." And here you see, between the lines, again, Dr. Joe doesn't mention exactly what the case was, but let's formalize it. Let's guess. They're involved in outreach, new. Talk about Shlomo Kalbach, talk about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I don't want to use the word, the Lubavitcher Rebbe made a mistake, but there's no question. He told Shlomo, you can't have men and women together, boys and girls together. No, show me one Chabad center across the world where there's separate seating during a general program. Did you see yesterday's Jerusalem Post, the article by my Talmud Chaver, by Rabbi David Eliezeri? Yeah, I have a lot to say on that article. He says there are four different trends in America today: Orthodox, Chabad, Conservative, Reform. And Chabad reaches out to tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, absolutely. But you don't insist, davening, separate. Baruch Hashem, every Chabad shul is Orthodox. But the outreach, the people. So you see, this Kanoi probably got up like someone speaking in the 1930s. If we're going to teach Torah in America, nor in Yiddish. It has to be in Yiddish. It can't be in English. English is a Goyish language. Whoever grew up a Ben Torah speaking English. And people really thought like that. Rabbi Aaron Kutler was hysterical. We have word by word what he said at a good Rabbanim meetings. Only in Yiddish. Now where would we be today? Only in Yiddish. Ariel, do you verstehst Yiddish? Do you verstehst Yiddish? Abyssal, I feel nicht abyssal. Was kann man tun? Eli, was ist mit euch? Ein bisschen, ja? Oh, ja, sehr fein, schön, gut. Hab nachher, ein bisschen, gut. Okay, okay. Ariane, don't give him his opinion. Let him, he can fake me out. It's okay. The Rebbe enjoys being faked out. So you see, Rebbe Yaakov Kamenetsky took whose side? Dr. Joe. See, this is where you got to read between the lines. And then he tells fascinating, fascinating stories how people confuse the two. Now, one story is very moving for me. I apologize. If I cry, forgive me. But you have to understand my whole heart, my whole being is Torah, is Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Torah Yisrael. I have no other values in life. Those three values are my values. And I have to be honest with you, if I eulogize Dr. Kabakow yesterday, you can't start to understand what it was like risking your life for the Jewish people in communist Russia. I don't want to minimize it. To tell you I wasn't frightened, I'd be lying to you. But somehow, my wife and I more than managed. Now, one of the people I sent in my office hangs a picture of Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo. I don't have to elaborate. Everyone knows one of the greatest tragedies, Nava. I mean, I know all his children intimately. His wife, David's wife, was a student in their Michlala, maybe 71, 72, Deborah. She never remarried. She devoted her life to David's memory. And I can tell you more between the lines, but it's not for publication. I don't know if I give all the credit in the world. Life has to go on, but you have to admire a woman who became widowed in the prime of life, and she devoted her life to David's memory, David and Nava. Hashem Yikom Damo. And so when I was sending David, Deborah, we preferred to send couples. Deborah couldn't go. She had four young children. So David went with a friend of his, Zalman, an architect. It turned out to be Reed Washington. I write about, I had to do something tangible that when Eli reads it, he should understand what I'm talking about sending people. So both in Washington and both in Rakafarar and Chelik Dalet, which I gave you yesterday, you'll see this, I present a memorial to them. So you can read all about it there. But what I didn't write about is that David came to me and he said, look, Rabbi Aaron, you're sending us. I'd like to contact my Rebbe's family, what's left in Leningrad. I know he has family in Leningrad. Who's his Rebbe? Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. So I said, David, I have to talk to the boss. I couldn't make a decision like that on my own, you understand? This is, we're dealing here with life and death decisions. You have to understand, you're in Russia. You're being watched at every second. So I spoke with the boss, Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who headed up this department for the Mossad, and later got Pras Yisrael, because he was the one that came up with the idea of people like Rakefet have dual identity. You understand? I'm a real American and a real Israeli, and I can play either role. I get off the plane in Kennedy, and I'm asking what the Yankees did. You understand what I'm saying? It's not just that you have an American passport. I had people with American passports. I couldn't send them. They spoke with an accent. I need people that if the KGB questions me, I can tell them about Joe DiMaggio. So I asked the boss, and he said that, you know, the boss was from his father, grandfather, his great uncle was a Rosh Yeshiva in Slabodka, his father was a Sheikhet. He was one of the founders of Kibbutz Sad. So when I mentioned Rabban Soloveitchik, you understand he was shaking. So he told me, look, if the relatives want to meet with him, he can go. Why'd he put it that way, Aryan? Do you understand why? Because they're putting themselves in sakana by meeting with a tourist. So if the relatives agree to meet with him, Arya gave permission. So David and Zalman went to visit Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's basically first cousins in Leningrad. And they were telling him, you know, they caught up, they sent akudos, greetings, and caught up, and the family, what happened. And it's very sad, because here you have Feinsteins. They were Feinsteins, not Mitzad Soloveitchik, but Mitzad Feinstein. Here you have Feinsteins who know nothing about Yiddishkeit. They just know they come from great rabbis. But the communists did to us. We still suffer until today. Look at Avigdor Lieberman. Do I have to go further? Look at Bennett, what Bennett created here. And look at Rakefet, who's not wrong, whether you like it or not. The ultimate question, who do you feel more at home with, Meirav Michaeli or a Jew from Meisharim? It's an interesting question. And you'll get various answers. My answer is no question, the Jew in Meisharim. That was for Baron Lichtenstein's answer. And people were shocked. Harvard graduate. I have to be honest with you. Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, davening Drei Molateg, to daven three times a day, etc. What is Judaism about? What is Torah about? What's my connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam about? So David Applebaum visited them and brought back all the information to Rabarin and Elka. And they were very happy. I think they actually thanked me for arranging it too. Here's an interesting story. Because they had the same names, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Joe Kamenetsky, J. Kamenetsky. So when Rabbi Yaakov was in Williamsburg, Rosh Hashivim Torah Vadas, I think I've alluded to it, I don't have to spell it all out. In other words, Torah history, I have to be honest. I just got a letter that the Novominska told endless people that my work in Reb Lazer Silver is totally honest, researched well, and Teredic, and recommended it down the line. So, but not everything has to be told. Humans are humans, right? So the Machleket and Torah Vadas got very bad. And Rabbi Yaakov had an unlisted phone, okay? An unlisted phone. Suddenly, Joe Kamenetsky gets a call, and what was the story? They were looking for Rabbi Yaakov. They thought the number, J. Kamenetsky, is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. What was the call? One of these American tourists who had been sent to Russia, not by us, that's not the Mossad, but all over America, Chicago, New York, every big city, Philadelphia, had an organization that fought for Russian Jewry. And people sent tourists, and you got to remember, you had an American passport. I write about this in Washington. It's not that the KGB didn't know who the heck we are. It's that they really couldn't do anything, because if the minute they started throwing out, and they did throw out, even people I sent, people from Russia, the State Department retaliated, throwing people out from America, so-called tourists. Now, every Russian who came to America, a tourist, Murray, is a tourist, is also a spy. And you don't realize, to bring back a catalog from Sears Roebuck, do you know what I'm talking about? It's before the computer. Today it's all on the computer. To bring back a catalog from Sears Roebuck, that itself was valuable for the Russians. So if they threw out the State Department, you threw out one, two, three. State Department threw out five couples from here. So they had it tolerated. In addition, we brought in hard currency. Everything was dollars. Russia was a third, you know, the world didn't realize how poor the country was. It ultimately brought communism down. So this person from Chicago returned. They called whom they thought was Reb Yaakov to tell him that his long-lost brother is in, they don't say the city, or maybe Leningrad, a lot of Jews in Leningrad, it could be Moscow, and they send regards, they would like to hear from him. Well, Dr. Joe got in touch with Reb Yaakov, and Reb Yaakov actually made a trip to Russia to see his older brother. It was soon afterwards the brother died, but the brothers were reunited. And he tells another story. And this story I actually heard from Joe Kamenetsky in person, that he comes to England, excuse me. He comes to England, and on the way back from Israel, in those years you didn't have direct flights, so you would stop off in England. Comes to England, and the community knows he's going to be there for Shabbat. There are big signs welcoming him. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, Hagon Hagadol, Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Das. And it's not Reb Yaakov, it's Joe Kamenetsky. And he spoke, and he spent a few days there, and all right, he called Reb Yaakov, or he saw Reb Yaakov in the Torah Mesorah office, and he told them the story. They both laughed, and then he told them, you know, everyone says the English Jews are cold. Now, there's a lot of truth that the English Jews originally, the from English Jews were all of German origins. They all got there in the 30s, the kinder transport, etc. I remember I was a guest of the London community for a whole month, and many talks, people, the talk I gave from Central Fall Hirsch, standing room only, because they were, Yek is German, and they appreciated the talk, because you got to remember, Rav Hirsch, I can tell you stories of ad infinitum. But Hirshian people in Washington Heights paint Rav Hirsch Lakewood style. And that's not Rav Hirsch. He's not YU, but he's a very interesting individual, and you have to understand him within his own context. So I got the biggest crowd. So Dr. Joe says to Reb Yaakov, everyone says the British Jews are cold. So Reb Yaakov says to him, that may have been true years ago, but now you have a lot of survivors who wound up in England, Europäische Yidden, East European Jews. And he calls Reb Yaakov, Europäische Yidden sein doch Europäische Yidden. European Jews remain European Jews. They already have a Warmkeit. So those people that welcomed you, you have to understand, could very well be, it's not so much the original English German Jews, but these are the new English Europäische. And this is absolutely true. If you've been to England today, Golders Green, Hendon, Stamford Hill, you're going to find, people of German origins, but you're going to find a world of Hasidim and Galiziana, and you'll find Belz is very big, Belz of Hasidim, all over the place. All right, what Jews are doing there, again, my children carry on, my grandchildren carry on, how any Jew can live in Chutz Laretz, and they can't start to understand Lech Lecha Meyat Lecha, their grandfather's word. Beit Avicha, you're at home or right down the street. They beat up a Jew right down the street. They did ripped off a mezuzah. What's going on in America? But they're there. How long they'll be there? Anyone smart? I told people at the wedding, don't you understand? Go back to Germany, 1930, 1931, 1932. My son-in-law, his parents, they're survivors. They ran to Norway, World War II. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, why did they wait to World War II? I have very good friends, and I mention their name, my closest friends. She's only alive because in 1938, her mother insisted, we got to get out, Czechoslovakia. Father said, what's wrong? We're wealthy, we're well off, we know the language, we know the culture. And they were able to get to New Zealand. That saved their lives. Today, almost all their descendants live in Israel. Many of them Hasidim, Chabadnikim, Rabbi Ginsburg's Hasidim. The original family on the father's side has Chabad roots. But people, they're there. That's London. The Varentite blight. Okay, Ellie, did you understand me? You'll explain it to Arian later, like the Belzer Rebbe leaned over and explained to Rav Ovadia Yosef what Rav Shach was saying. Now, and here he quotes Reb Yaakov, and this I could dash in for hours, quotes Reb Yaakov, and I'll put it in the context, the Gemara, in relation to Balotcha, Le Shabbat Sedra, Balotcha. So you see, Aseilecha, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu he has to build Chatzotzrot to call the people together. And Chazal say, it's a Gemara, I believe in Menachatav Chavchet, it's a Gemara, open Gemara, that any other keli from the Beit HaMikdash you can pass on from generation to generation. If we could only find, for instance, the Ark today, if we could find the menorah, we could use it. But the Chatzotzrot, Aseilecha, it's only for Moshe Rabbeinu. It can't be passed on. Why? What's wrong with passing it on? Because to be a leader, to speak the language, you have to speak the language of the generation. And Moshe Rabbeinu spoke his language to his people. Aaron Rekepet has to speak a different language. We're a continued chain for Moshe Rabbeinu. Take it, you can trace the Gedolei Yisrael, the Rabbeim, B'chol Dov V'Dor in every generation. But we dress differently, speak differently, the Torah is the same, the commitment is the same, the Eish HaKodesh that burns within us is the same, but the outward manifestations, Ota Geveret, Bishinui Aderet, modern Hebrew. So Rav Yaakov says, what was so important that Yaakov Avinu had to learn in Yeshivat Shem Ve'Evad? He gave up, you all know, Kibbut Avieinu, he was punished, but not for those 14 years, for the other years that he was away from his father. But why was it so important? And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky darshaned that in every generation, you have to know how to teach Torah within its context. What was the greatness of Shem Ve'Eva? They lived at the time of the Tower of Babel. And they knew, even at that time, Migdal Bavel, as hard as it was, how great the paganistic influence were for. I refer you an hour ago what I had to say about my lecture of yesterday. The paganistic influences were so great, and they knew how to survive. And Yaakov knew we're going to be in Mitzrayim. Geyi Yazaracha Be'eretz Lahem. We got to know how to survive. And in every generation, you have to know how to teach within that context, to face the challenges, how to survive. That was Reb Yaakov. And this is why he could understand Dr. Joe. He says, whenever I had problems, he was the one who understood me. He was the one who protected me. He was the one who stood up for me. And Rabbi Yaakov, here he tells stories about him on page 123, where you see again the tremendous love for Jews and respect for non-Jews. And he tells two stories here. One story which Simcha reveals Yomel to us. Again, you young people, thank God, don't understand Yomel, don't understand what we went through. You're not going to understand Rav Shlomo Kalbach. You'll verbalize when I talk about it. But here were millions of Jews totally assimilated by coercion, not by choice. In America, it's by choice. Then I have to tell you, the Secretary of State, the President's children all married to Jews. We don't have to elaborate. Choice. You want to be a pagan? It's popular today, paganism. To be like Trump's children, grandchildren. Like Trump's devotees. They think it's terrible. Shabbat, Kashrut, the sacrifice, giving up human directive, human happiness. Noach, I don't understand how a person can live without Shabbat. And they don't understand how a person can live with Shabbat. You understand what I'm saying? This is the challenge for us. Eli's involved, Tel Aviv, etc. So the Russian kids started coming to America. And you all know this was a very big problem in the Soviet, Free Soviet Jewry movement. Let my people go, let my people go, to go to Israel. But you can't force people. And once the masses got out, yes, it's true, 1.5 million came to Israel. But hundreds of thousands came to the United States, and particularly to Brooklyn, to New York, Queens. And Rav Yaakov was one of the founders of Be'er HaGola. Now, Be'er HaGola was a day school specifically for Russian Jewish children. Did they succeed entirely? No. It was a problem of clash of mentality. You had the problem of people sending their children like Yomo, not because they wanted religion, but because they were frightened stiff of the public school situation with the drugs. The drugs particularly scared them. In Russia, they do not have the drug problem that we have in Israel or that we have in the United States. There are many reasons why. Among them, if anyone is caught with drugs in Russia, certainly during the communist era, they were executed and the public knew about it. Communism has no value for human life. They have no God. They're pagans. So they execute. It's like China today, the highest percentage of executions in the world. So Yomo winds up in Be'er HaGola. Not always did they succeed. Yomo turns into one of the real success stories. Whether Be'er HaGola deserved, they certainly put the foundation. But he winds up in Morasha and Rabbi Willig, and that's where you have to give the real credit. Other people went to Be'er HaGola and they came down too hard. Particularly the girls, their rate of success was much less among the women. Reasons why. You come down, tzniut, proper dress, lifestyle. You got to remember, in communist Russia, there was no sanctity to marriage. Communist Russia, the average person married, divorced, married again. Even among the refusnik community, there was one famous refusnik, I shall not mention his name, who I knew intimately. He lives in Haifa. You know how many wives he has in Israel? 3 different women who are proud to use his last name. Wife 1, wife 2, wife 3. And all of them are frum. All of them are frum. And there were, I mean, I can go on and tell you stories. There were, I'll tell you a classic story. Moshe, are you going to go and make movies? Here's a movie for you, plain and simple. There were kids became frum in high school, and they had to go to school Shabbos. They couldn't take notes. So one girl, a Gentile girl, took notes for them on Shabbos. carbon paper. You remember carbon paper? Carbon paper. We used to write on carbon and make a copy, two copies, and she took notes for them on Shabbat. Well, she became very friendly with them. One of these men, let me just think, one of the women she was friendly with, her father, a professor, divorced his Jewish wife, and she converted, only 25 years younger, and they live happily ever after until today, not that far from here. Ellie, what are you laughing? These are fair. You don't know why to split this course. We got involved. Well, it's not for now. I don't have to elaborate. But Reb Yaakov, one of the founders. But I'll tell you a very sad story. And this too catches the problems we're against in up against the paganistic world, the contemporary world, the New York Times world. There's a true story. There's a beautiful picture at a dinner in honor of Be'er HaGola, raising funds, and you can see Reb Yaakov there and Reb Avraham Pam, and this kid, a Russian kid, came to America, or was born in America, Russian parents, native language Russian, the whole background Russian, and the kid is reciting Mishnayot Ba'al Peh. And I think I saw a video of it. And Reb Yaakov kisses him, Reb Avraham Pam kisses him. And he asks, what became of that kid? I told him, Mechalel Shabbos, Ochlin, the Velet and Trefet, maybe a miracle happened afterwards. Went to university. University is crucially important for Russians. Education, crucially important. And this kid, later at university, meets the paganistic world. Why do I need these strictures? Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarach Mishpacha, Adam, Yashav, Be'einav, Yaseh. Let's, because it's live and drink today. Tomorrow we won't be here. And that's captures, but that's Reb Yaakov. You could see, not all the Rosh Yeshiva knew how to reach out to the Russians. I don't have to talk about Avraham Pam later with Shuvu and all that goes on here in Israel. What love, what outreach, what dedication. And yours truly reached one little decision. Don't be depressed by your failures. Be overwhelmed by your success. Got it? You make a family from, two families from. I was sitting, my granddaughter, my only granddaughter, I had many grandsons, but only one granddaughter, and I had a miracle now on the fourth generation. I had two great granddaughters in a row. This is the first time, you have no idea, because here too, the boys way outweigh the girls. My daughter's actually going today to play with her new great granddaughter. Anna El said the name speaks for itself. So I went to visit my granddaughters to Sheret Lumi in Tel Aviv and guiding at museums. This is her second year, and they took it. It's a very, considered a very fine opportunity, and she had the advantage that she speaks English. I don't say it's the Queen's English, but she speaks English, and it certainly improved as a result of the year and all that comes afterwards. So we went to visit her. So we took her, she was showing us around Sarona, and then we took her out for lunch, a place that good Heksher. Not too many places there have a Heksher. It was on the side of Sharona. And sitting in back of us, outdoors where you're eating, are two young men dressed in uniforms, portable ghettos, and they're learning Mishnah Brura in Russian. And Malka and I were in tears. And they say, this is the results. Don't look at the failures. Don't look at where we failed, where we didn't inspire, where the paganistic world defeated us. Look where we achieved. And I went over to them and I spoke with them. And the minute I mentioned Shvut Ami, they, you know, first they looked at me, Ashek, it's a guy, who the heck is this idiot with the American accent? Oh, I mentioned Shvut Ami, they fainted. And then we started to talk a little more. They realized, Baruch Hashem, I'm not the biggest Amoritz in the world. But that's Reb Yaakov. There's another beautiful story here that Dr. Joe came to his house, and it happened to be Halloween. And they take a look near the door. As they walk in, are all piles of bags with goodies to give out. Trick or treat. Kids are going to knock on the door. This is Muncie before it was overrun by the Hasidic world. And here's Reb Yaakov and his Rebbetzin prepared to honor a non-Jewish kid. And this shows. And he writes how Reb Yaakov was hesitant to become, when Reb Aaron Cutler died, he was hesitant to become the head of the Rabbinic Advisory Board. But they said to him, it's your turn now. And ultimately, he couldn't say no. And it was Joe Kamenetsky who led the plea that Reb Yaakov has to take over. And when he finally agreed, Reb Yaakov said, quote, now they will say, Kamenetsky, Misayeya Kamenetsky. That one Kamenetsky helps another Kamenetsky. And here again, read between the lines, page 124. Reb Yaakov became my greatest friend and advisor. His wisdom, his tenderness, his understanding spared me great anguish, even pain from the Kanoim, the very right-wing element whose stringency I considered a threat to the Hebrew day school movement in the early days. Fortunately, Reb Yaakov shared my views to some extent. He was a true voice of moderation and understanding how delicately one must deal with those who are far from Judaism. And he goes on and on praising Reb Yaakov. When Reb Yaakov, then you reach a certain age, people, you can't believe all the invitations and all the money that's been thrown in my face recently. And a new year, if I'm coming to America, and I feel bad, but you reach a certain age, your physical abilities are more limited. You just, and I told, they came with a beautiful offer. I said, had you come to me 40, 50 years ago, I would have jumped. But I said, today, if anyone wants to hear me, they have to come to Gris. I hope by next Elul, Gris will be open to the public again. And he says, when Reb Yaakov finally felt he couldn't carry on, so he encouraged his first cousin, Reb Yaakov Ruderman, who was younger, the Rosh Yeshiva of Bnei Yisrael, he took over as the chief advisor in place of Reb Yaakov. And then a few years later, Dr. Joe Kamenetsky moves on to the State of Israel. Finally, I want to quote a document to you. And again, I apologize. It's very moving for me. Sometimes a story of an incident that happens, it just, you live history. You see exactly the period. That's why memoir literature is crucial to understanding Torah history. I hope if people will want to understand why you, in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, my memoir will play a big source. It's real. It's honest. That's the way it was. Again, I want to quote to you from Jewish Action. I believe it's the same Jewish Action I quoted from yesterday in a halachic context. And it's Jewish Action, Spring 2021. And in this Jewish Action, the issue, what happens in Jewish Action under the wonderful leadership of Nechama Carmel, is they take a theme and they devote the major part of the issue to this theme. And here, this action is the art of giving. It's the art of giving. That's what it's devoted to. And here they tell a story about a communal leader. I've never met this individual, but I'm overwhelmed by the beauty and the depth of the interview. It's someone from Detroit, Gary Torgo. He's interviewed by Nechama Kamel, the editor. Anyone know Barry Torgo? To the best of my knowledge, I never taught a member of his family. And he tells the story. He's president of the biggest day school in the Detroit area, Yeshiva Beth Yehuda, they would call it. Beth Yehuda, or as they pronounce it, Beth Yehuda. And they ask, Nechama Kamel asks him, how did you start out in communal work? He's evidently a very successful, I think he's a lawyer, very successful. And he says, I started out as an officer in our local Young Israel because my grandfather had been a member of this Young Israel. And he says, during those years, I developed a very close relationship with Rabbi Avraham Abba Friedman, who ultimately became my Rebbe. Who is Rabbi Avraham Abba Friedman? He's a Torah Vadas graduate, Talmid Mufak of Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Mendelovich sent him in 1944 to Detroit to build a day school. Mr. Mendelovich felt that there is an obligation to establish a day school in any place where there are 5,000 Jews. And he sent this young man, and it took root. And my Rebbe, in other words, he was a rabbi in Detroit, probably had a shul, he got to know him, Young Israel, and he calls him my Rebbe. My Rebbe was mission-centric. He was totally focused on the Jewish people. There was no small talk with him. It was all business. And it wasn't your business. It was the Almighty's business. He encouraged me, among others, to get involved in the local Jewish day school they built, Yeshiva Beth Yehuda. That's where my communal career began. And he goes on and he explains, because of his Rebbe, he took him to Brooklyn, he met some of the big Rebbeim from Torah Vadas, and they all told him, you have to do L'Shem Shemayim. Don't do what's good for you. L'Shem Shemayim for the Jewish people. And he ultimately becomes the president of a day school. Now, being the president of a day school, it's a big responsibility. Your biggest responsibility is budget. Budget, I don't have to tell you, Lubavitch was, the Rebbe was a genius. That he, Lubavitch school system in Israel, it's part of Mamlachli Dati. They never have to worry about budget. All I can tell you is the budget worries destroyed my cousin Rabbi Revel. The depression, he died a young man. Dr. Belkin, wiped out. Wiped out. Normie Lamb had a miracle that he had Sheldon Sokol, my classmate, Zichrono Livracha, who handled the finances, and Sheldon was a genius at finances. Again, these names are forgotten. His life moves on. I have to accept that. As I told you, no one in Maplewood will remember, you'll say, there was once a Rabbi Rothkopf here who built from scratch an Orthodox shul. They'll laugh at you. All right, maybe it's history. We'll look it up in the Daily Gazette. But that's life. But a budget, you know what the budget did to Richard Joel with I don't have to mention the name, he just died. And take a look what my Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, has now with the government money, with the pagans. It's not a simple matter. So he tells the following story of fundraising, and I think this story should be immortalized. There is an unorthodox, amazingly generous couple in our Detroit community. They are wonderful, outstanding people who are givers to all kinds of causes in the community. The local Orthodox day school was not necessarily their top priority, but they get, these are people, what you call, they have Jewish feeling. They have Jewish feeling. But a lot of Jews, you see it too. I once saw, my daughter told me all about it too. The head of Kachal Lavan, the former chief of staff, Gans, she saw him at the Kotel. He knows how to daven as well as anyone. He was raised properly. Moshe, all his family are Satma on all sides. Everyone is Satma. But the concept that halacha commands obedience is lacking. You follow? They have a kosher home, but outside of the house, all right, we can eat in a treif restaurant where we're only eating fish. This is a certain mentality. And these people evidently fit into this pattern. So the yeshiva, Bet Yehuda, had many needs. So we called the husband. We said, quote, "Jimmy, we understand your wife has a big birthday coming up." He said, "Yes, she does." I don't know, maybe she turned 50, let's say. Big birthday. I have a big birthday. I turned 80, was a big birthday, but I will assume not 80, 50. Good. We said, "We have an idea for a fantastic birthday gift for her." He said, "Really? What?" We said, "We think you should buy her the new campus of the girls' school that we are building for Yeshiva Beth Yehuda." The request was out of left field. The Almighty placed the idea in our minds. "No, I don't think so," Jimmy answered. But a few days later, he called back. A few minutes later, and said, "I forgot to ask you, how much is it?" We gave him the figure, and remarkably, with his great foresight and Hashem's guidance, he said, "Okay, I'll be happy to do it." Subsequently, his wife Nancy told me the rest of the story. She celebrated her birthday with a family party. When it was her husband's turn to speak, he said, quote, "Nancy, I bought you a really, really expensive gift." She said, "Oh, Jimmy, I hope it's not another house. We have enough houses." He said, "No, it's not another house." She said, "I hope it's not another piece of jewelry. I have plenty of jewelry." He said, "It's not jewelry." She said, "I hope it's not another piece of art. We have no room on our walls." He said, "It's not art, not jewelry." "And it's not another house, but it's a gift you can never return." With tears in his eyes, Jimmy said, "Nancy, I bought you the campus of Yeshiva Beth Yehuda's girls' school." She told me that she started to cry, and she said, "Jimmy, this is the nicest gift I have ever received." Well, I don't have to comment. I think this story speaks for itself, speaks for the budgetary problems. It speaks for the relationship Torah Jews and Jews who do not yet fully comprehend Torah but have feeling for Jewish survival. And it speaks for the period, the era, Detroit, the school, the Rebbe, the Talmud, Gary, and his Rebbe, Rabbi Friedman Zichrono Livracha. And Ellie, what are you going to do for Ariane when she turns 50, Be'ezrat Hashem, decades from now? Don't want to talk about a woman's age. Decades. Now, I know Ariane's parents. And I know her grandparents. And I know who her great-grandparents were. There's nothing you can buy her that she needs. Jewelry, art, homes. How many homes does a person need? I want you to remember this story. Don't forget it. It is beautiful. What Torah Mesorah did, you cannot put a price on. And as I've said time and again, Mr. Mendelovich had many achievements, but Torah Mesorah is the jewel in the crown. Torah V'das, you can have America without Torah V'das. You can have an America without YU, and I love YU, don't misunderstand me. But without Torah Mesorah, it would not be the America it is today. Tens of thousands of kids, hundreds of thousands. How many of them wound up from the day school? Bnei Akiva, NCSY, Chabad, the outreach. Today already, Agudat Yisrael, Pirche, Benot, Benois. Let me pronounce it right. Wow. And this was one man. Yes. I have to be honest, my cousin had the idea before Mr. Mendelovich. Rabbi Revel spoke about this. He was criticized. He was attacked in the press. He's going to turn American youngsters into greenhorns. They won't speak a good English. But Rabbi Revel, the depression, his responsibilities, could never carry it out. It's a miracle that Yeshiva survived, that we were able to move on after 1929. But Mr. Mendelovich had the great schut. And more than anyone, that he was able to get Joe Kamenetsky to come to Torah Mesorah. And you got to give the Rav credit when Dr. Belkin wanted to bring him to Azrieli full-time, organize it, be dean. The Rav said to, the way they spoke to each other, he said, Shmuel, Lazim Suru, Etut Guta Abbot, let him where he is, don't bother him. He does good work. Okay, this was Joe. Now, so what have we done today? I have more to do. I have to earn my living, I have to pay myself, let off a little steam. But the last hour and a half, we finished out Joe Kamenetsky, and the Rabbinic Advisory Board, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, a sideshow with Reb Nussan Kamenetsky, very interesting, the Brisk of Rav, what Reb Nussan knew, that's the great loss because of the Kanaot, which kills him, literally and figuratively. You're a close friend. You don't understand what I'm talking about. We admired each other. We understood each other. He never wrote another book. He had a lot more material. It's lost. And Reb Nussan, he knew he was a genius on his own. He was Reb Yaakov's son. But his father, eingesappt, I don't know how to say that in English, he absorbed a great deal of material, which is lost. And we ended off the class, but we didn't end with this wonderful Jew, Gary Torgo. I never met him. Beautiful picture here, smiling. I have more to say. There's more to this memoir that is crucially important. And then an introduction, I'm going to quote from an author who I look up to. Volume 4, Rakafet Aram. And then we start to roll. Again, I could talk about Reb Shlomala and Reb Meir and Rebitson Esther. I could talk about them for years. It's not that important. Here, I'll give you, each one has a book written about them. So you have where to go. It's not the Lubavitcher Rebbe here. It's not the Satmar Ruv. But I want to deal with the heart of what they sought to achieve in their life. And I want to deal with the roses, and I will also deal with the thorns. It's not Artsville. It's an honest picture, but it's very important we speak about them. What we won't finish this year, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll pick up exactly where we left off in both classes next Chodesh Elul. Be'ezrat Hanotein Layav Koach. I'm older now, and the corona was not easy. And I have a vort that I tell people, even if you recover from corona, but somehow it affected your body in many other ways. And my wife and I cannot say we've come back to dance a hori yet. But all right, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will get there. But we'll pick up in dignity in Chodesh Elul. Now, are there any questions?
Okay.
Well, whose vote?
The vote you said about the Hatzotros.
Yeah.
That would be strongly in Rav shared it.
The same thought, yeah.
I think in a Shabbos at Gadol Drasha, when he was justifying the fact that he was teaching a weekly parsha share on TV.
Aha.
And he was under fire.
Under fire.
Bro, like Gary, he was the
teacher, as I said, in this generation, we have the Jew Achabseret, that was fits in. Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim. That's exactly the thought. And Rabbi Yaakov too. You saw what Rabbi Yaakov said also. Very nice, very nice. First of all, when you shop in Rami Levi, they give you a gift. I took two. If anyone wants, these volumes are beautiful on Shabbat, both the Halacha and the Agada, the understanding, if anyone wants. Now, with our Torah, I got so many questions. First of all, I have to apologize. People want to meet with me. I'm very limited time-wise. Part of it has to do with my own desires to write and complete and learn and be machadesh. And part of it is just all the time we waste going to doctors. If we talk about Yonah Baumol, Zach Baumol missing in action, what I said an hour and 40 minutes ago with today's the anniversary of Sultan Yaakov. So I became very active, and I would meet once a week with Yonah, the father of Zach, and a retired general, Mike Kaplan, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, who we would go through. And you have no idea, one day maybe I should just give a lecture of how humans can take advantage of people who have tzarat. We used to go through all the, any new information, anything new that we can cover, any modiyin, etc. So Yonah turned 70. So Yonah says, we're sitting around in a cafe, and Yonah says, I asked my doctor, I'm wasting too much time going to doctors. Doctor says, Yonah, how old are you? Well, I just turned 70. How much time do you spend? 30% of my time. Not enough. When you turn 70, it's 40%. I can tell you when you turn 80, it's 50%. This week I taught Sunday, Monday. Tomorrow is my doctor, big meeting, and I have to take care of all these matters. And he's going to send me, I think I have to do a bone marrow test again. He said it's too many Ribbono Shel Olam. And then Thursday, the optometrist, as I told you. Wednesday, we'll do shopping. So I apologize, but you should know I have a principle. I only speak to my students. I'm not a Rebbe. The Lubavitch Rebbe had the ability to speak to everyone. If I don't know you, how can I talk to you? You understand? You want advice, you want that. And a lot of people want to talk out this issue of women. So our Torah, Rabbi Riskin, all over the place, published ads in the Jerusalem Post and in the Makor Rishon, and the women that have graduated and all the great women who have and their positions. So I just want to make something clear. I'm the happiest person in the world to see learned women. No one can accuse me of not raising daughters who are not learned. My eldest daughter is the first to learn it in the history of our people since Moshe Rabbeinu stepped down from Mount Sinai. And believe me, she had to learn Ebenezer and Choshen Mishpat. Now my other daughters too, I don't want to go into more. They can all handle a Daf Gemara, and one daughter brings me Sperma and Reb Nachmi Breslov and Chabad. And they want to broaden my thinking, which they have. I'm not a Lehefer. I'll be the happiest person in the world to sign an Isha that men are not allowed to teach women in seminaries, etc. Do I have to elaborate? Women teach women. I remember Machon Gold, the early 70s, so there was Machon Gold and Michala. And Michala started carrying on that Machon Gold is not that firm. So they started a campaign among gold with the, pardon me, Ari, for the length of the skirts, etc. So there was one girl that had complaints. So they came to me and I said, you're coming to me? In other words, a Rebbe should tell the girl he's looking at her skirts. What do you think, I'm a Russia? I said, if you really feel the girl, the Madricha should talk with her, not a male. And I can tell you more stories about the similar situations. I'll be the happiest person in the world. There was just a big scandal with a seminary a few years ago. People say they know that. God have mercy. A yomok calls me a chatzim malach because I don't know if I'm a chatzim malach, but I know I have a wife and there's a Torah and you don't look elsewhere. Okay, I don't have to spell it out. What are we, pagans? Okay. So, my objection is when you make a woman a rabbi, and all over the world they announce this, she is the only a woman. What about edut, wedding? What about beitin, geirut? Where are we drawing the line? What about a man has problems? Let me not spell it out. Impotency, leit koach gavra. I understand well. You tell me you have a woman. Rakevet already gave two titles. Rabbinic advisor, spiritual advisor. All right, a big shul. I love it. But not to turn a woman into a man. Have one rabbi. It's a woman. Ashrenu shezachinu. So in this whole list, I don't have any objections, except when they turn the woman into the sole rabbi. Okay, and I don't understand Rabbi Riskin, I don't understand Rabbi Kenny Branda. We all grew up with the Rav. I don't know. I wish I could be a Chabadnik and bring the Rebbe back to the Rav back to life and say, Rebbe, this is the problem we have today. Is it paganism or is it Judaism? Binyamin, take this article, share it with Ellie. This was sent to me after the death of Chabad's Messiah, and let me know how I should respond to it. I'll tell you what I responded, but read it. It is powerful. Yeah. Whatever you wish. This is Chabad, the interview of the week. 5 minutes late is also late. A fabulous article where the Rebbe comes in to check on the kids' learning, and the base medrash, it's like at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, it begins the second Seder, and just three kids are there. And the Rebbe gets hold of, he sends a message to the administrator, 5 minutes late is also late. I appreciate, that's beautiful. Here I want to show you something that's overwhelming. This is the Rebbe being Masadik edition. This is a minhag today that when a couple gets married in Chabad, they give out a maskeret, or teshurah they call it, a gift to the wedding. You go to some weddings, there's a gift on the table, right? So here there's a gift for everyone. And this is the two families who got married. It's all their correspondence with the Rebbe. It's overwhelming. Every letter they ever got from the Rebbe and the previous Rebbe, it is absolutely beautiful. And you'll see the Rebbe, at times he writes the letters, at times it's his secretaries. There are letters here from Rabbi Simpson, from all the help that the Rebbe had, Rabbi Chodakoff, you'll see Rabbi Mindel, very beautifully done. Who here is the closest to the Lubavitcher way of thinking in this classroom right now? Whoever it is, you're welcome to take it. You're welcome to take it. It's a beautiful gift. And this is the Rebbe's signature here, like when he gave a gift. I hope you appreciate it, because I showed my wife, and my wife says, where are you going to put it? I say, I got to understand, my house, my wife says to my grandson, we got to move, get more rooms. And my grandson says, what do you need more room for? Asabel just put more books in? That's what you need more room. So I said, this I'm giving to a Talmud, but he should appreciate what he's getting. And can we meet again in health and happiness? Yomo, can you open it to the world? Without Yomo, where would we be? Where would we be? Is it open? Yeah.
Gary Torgo is in YU in mid to late 70s.
He's a YU graduate?
Yes.
Beautiful.
I knew him a little, I didn't know him very well. And I did see him once or twice in Detroit when I was there, but quite a while ago, I knew he was active in the community.
It's a beautiful.
He was an NCSY leader and he was in YU a couple years behind me.
Wow, do you hear what's being said? Ellie, do you hear what's being said? Gary Torgo is a YU product, NCSY, leader. So it joins worlds, Tera Vadas and YU join together. Tera Masora, beautiful. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for that information. And if anyone should see Gary Torgo or Nechama Kamel, please tell them that your humble servant was very moved and impressed. And I haven't finished the article yet. We have where to go from here, both very serious and very funny, as we will see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Are there any more comments?
You mentioned Rav Kitzis. How is Rav Kitzis doing?
How is who doing? Rav Kitzis? I don't know.
Kitzis.
Gershon Kitzis, I talked with for many years, both in Machon Gold and in Michlala.
Right, he was there, and Mark knows him also, from the Kollel.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, I don't know. I can't answer the question. How is Rabbi...
He was the one that found the letter to the editor I wrote to Ma'ariv with the remez for Begin's election. I was up in Aste Eliyahu that Shabbat, and I didn't get the Sunday paper, and that's the paper that had it in there. You mentioned Sheldon Sokol. Did you say Silver instead of Sokol?
Sokol. Sheldon Sokol.
You didn't say Sokol. I wasn't sure yet.
I said,
knew what you meant, I just wasn't sure.
Did I say, if I said Silver? I said Silver earlier when I spoke about the Silver book and the Amshanava. But the Sheldon Sokol is S-O-K-O-L. And
he spelled it with a C.
Spelled what?
I think he spelled it with a C, but I'm not sure.
S-O-K-O-L. See, it could
I
be.
I
seem to remember with the K, but it could be. I remember with the K. He was a year ahead of me in college, but we were in the same shiur together. And I'll tell you a moving story. When YU wanted me on the it was basically Bernard Rebel Graduate School wanted me on the publication of Rebel and Silva. And they brought us to New York, and there was a whole event, a whole affair, and I spoke, and he was there. And he came over to me, and he hugged me, and he said, "Oh, Arnie," he said, "you really achieved in life. Look what you achieved." I said, "Sheldon, what you achieved, there's no one like you. You saved the yeshiva from bankruptcy. You kept the ship going. You enabled Rabbi Lamb to function." And he broke into tears. And I had the feeling sometimes people do good. And I don't know, human beings are always critical. Why are we always critical? Why aren't we positive? Why don't we see the good? And he, mamish, broke into tears because I complimented him. And I was very moved by his words and by his demeanor. He didn't survive long afterwards. He died about 2 years later, I would say. Probably was in his high 70s, but to me he was a youngster yet. And he was really, I remember as a student, he was a serious guy. He didn't. He always was had a straight face. He didn't joke around. And we were right. It's true. We were in Noach Bornstein Shir together. Reb Noach, I was very close to him. And Baruch Hashem, I hope subsequently I didn't shame him. I would love to be able to speak to my Rebbeim and speak in learning and speak in what we have achieved in life, what we have seen, And to go further, to push into the 21st century and beyond, the kavod l'tiferet, love of Torah and understanding, and call a spade, paganism. I apologize for using the word the New York Times coined, progressive movement. I am as progressive as anyone, l'chadesh, within Torah context, to write Torah history, to create Torah Jews. There's nothing more progressive than that. But chnat chas v'chalila, a paganistic lifestyle. Okay, is any other...
When he bought the campus, the girls' campus, what was her reaction? Might sound cut off for a minute.
What was her reaction? She never got a better gift in her life, and she cried. That was her reaction. All right, that's life. All right. Rabbi Grinstein, Rabbi Rubin is looking for sources. If you have two men eating together and a woman, can they make a zimun together? Now, I know a lot has been written on that, because Meikar HaDin, it would seem they should. I think there's a Reb Kivega that they quote, but halacha l'maisa, people are worried about the slippery slope. Do you have a source sheet on
that?
Yes. What I tell you?
I don't, Rebbe, I don't have a source sheet on it, but I will look. And B, I do know that the Rosh Yeshiva Har Etzion today, Rav Gidi, paskins that within the family, brothers, sisters, you can make a zimun of women and men. Okay. Only two women and one man or whatever it might
right,
be.
Right, right, because they have the same chiyuv. Do me a favor, when you come up with the sources, send Yitzchak a copy and send me a copy. And Yitzchak...
I do have a source. It's either the unabridged Maaseh Rav or the Sefer HaMinhagei Hagra, where he seems to hold that if women are making a zimun, the men are mechuyav to get up and defer to the women.
Why defer to the women?
If there are two men and one woman, and three women, let's say.
Yeah, but I think the Rebbe is asking,
I think Kalichot Beit holds that it's fine anyway.
What's the Sefer Kalichot, Ma?
There's a Kalichot Beit Sefer somewhere.
I
think in there, it says there's no problem with staying there, but not to be necessarily
to be mitzvah. Halacha l'maaseh.
But it seemed that the Sefer Minhagei Hagra, I can look it up for you, I have it home.
I never heard Minhagei, I have Maaseh
Rav. Dr. Lift, the Sefer Minhagei Hagra, I believe, says that three women have a chiyuv of making a zimun together, but not men with.
No. I'm saying it has three women, but it says that if there are three women and fewer than three men, the men are mechuyav to get up. So it seems to hold that they shouldn't be there when they're doing it, whereas other people seem to hold that it's no problem.
Rabbi Grinstein, Rabbi Rubin and I both said you are amazing because on all these modern topics, you have source sheets. So, all right, we'll be samach on what you send us. Halacha l'maisa, I don't want to paskin, I've never seen it, and there is a very slippery slope, as we just spoke about, with women rabbis of shuls and publicity all over the world. All right, I want to thank everyone. We have Be'ezrat Hashem, we meet next week, we pick up exactly where we left off, and until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you all for honoring me with your presence. Das v'danya.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Very moving, that story with the woman. Very moving.